Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Quinsine. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us again for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. This week, we're very happy to have with us Jim Malazzi. Jim has been a senior leader with companies such as Aetna, Hartford Life. He's a CEO at Prudential Real Estate and Relocation. And if you listen to our last episode with Kim Cameron, he shared some stories about Jim and how that he applied positive leadership principles in his business and the results he was able to achieve. And we're looking forward to our conversation with Jim. Jim, can you give us just a little bit of your background, a little bit of your story?
Sure. Good morning, and thank you so much for having me with you all. I'm delighted to be with you. My story is kind of an interesting one, at least to me. Basically, I grew up outside of Boston, Massachusetts. Unfortunately, father passed away quite young and had to start to figure out life. And I was able to do, continued to be able to do, a variety of things that wouldn't be normal. So, for example, I always loved international travel. I was never on a plane until I was 22 years old. I had no reason to think I could have a career internationally, but I was able to. And my career is kind of centered around three big companies and then one very small company. The three big companies were the Aetna Group, where I spent some 25 years, both working domestically and internationally, perfecting my skills in mergers and acquisitions around the world. The second was with the Hartford Group, where I started some international private client business for them. And then the third spent 8 years with Prudential, Financial of the U.S., helping them in both their domestic retirement business, as well as ultimately being the CEO of Prudential Real Estate and Relocation, which is kind of a whole story in and of itself, which I'll spare you. And then over the last few years, I founded Mindset Advisors. And it's kind of one of those things that people do when they kind of figure out that they can do whatever they want to do. Right. And what I found with that is my practice went from being a subject matter expert, being called in by a variety of CEOs to help them what they thought were product problems in financial services, but what it really turned out to be culture problems. And so the vast majority of my work now is around helping management teams throughout the world kind of figure out how to get the best out of those groups following the practices of positive leadership, which I'm a big advocate of.
We were introduced by Kim Cameron recently, and he was on our podcast, and he has worked in the area of positive leadership and studying that, and he spoke of you as being kind of a case study in that area, and so definitely appreciate your thoughts today. I guess, you know, one of the questions I like to ask our guests and most guests that come on or ask this question, if you were able to kind of spin back time and knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself at the age of 22?
That's a great question. I love that question. The advice that I would give myself at age 22 is a lot of the advice that I did follow, which was, don't be afraid to try something new. Don't be afraid to try to fix something that's broken. And you'd say, why? Well, if you're trying something new and it's never done before for an organization or for yourselves, if you don't pull it off, that's okay. Nobody did it before. And if you're trying to fix something that's broken, well, it's already broken. So as long as you don't make it worse, hopefully you make it better. But what it really does in both those instances for the young self that I would say is it gives you the opportunity to try new things, show the type of hopefully manager, leader, technician that you are, whatever your chosen profession is, but also to separate yourself from a crowd. Because one of the things that I've found over life is there are literally probably billions at this point of people that are smarter than I am, who can work harder than I am. And part of succeeding in business and in life is being recognized and recognized for something positive.
That's good. So I know you've done some work around the kind of the question, who we are versus what we do. Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of as you're working with CEOs and organizations, you mentioned that a lot of times they think it's one problem, but it's actually something else. But how give us your thoughts around that.
Sure. And it's kind of an interesting one, especially in these days of pandemic and unfortunately a lot of folks losing their jobs literally throughout the world. And as Americans in particular, we focus a lot, we define who we are by what we do. What does that mean? Oh, if you know, in the old days when you could go to a cocktail party and socialize with other people, right, and somebody knew, they'd say, who are you? You know, and you'd say, oh, I'm Jim and I'm XYZ at this firm, right? And rather than say, gee, I'm Jim, I'm the father of two, I'm the husband of one. And so we get very confused. And what happens, especially in downsizing and when we lose that identity of what we do, it really affects part of who we are. And the best story that I ever heard about reinvention and that stuck with me is comes from a guy named Charlie Command Helicopters. And for those of you that may know who Command Helicopters are, they're based up in Connecticut, where I spent many, many years. And they make very specialized stuff. We're talking like Black Hawks, all that kind of really, you know, secret project type of helicopter for the military. And during the 1960s, there was a downturn in military spending and Command Helicopters wasn't doing very well. And so rather than lay off his very specialized force of technicians, craftsmen, he set aside to start to reinvent the guitar industry. Now, I happen to be an amateur guitarist, and if you've ever seen or heard of Ovation guitars, so essentially they're made out of composite materials. Glenn Campbell made them famous in the 1960s and 70s, and they all came from Command Helicopters, who started Ovation guitars, separating the who we are versus what we do. So the what we do is they used to make helicopters. He took those craftsmen and people and repurposed them into who they were in terms of then making guitars. And I just think that's a wonderful example of, especially if you're down, especially if you're having a tough day, it's whatever you did before is actually irrelevant. It's who you are, what you're capable of, how do you repurpose those life's lessons and experiences into something new, right? That's the key to kind of getting forward. And I've tried to do that in my own life and would offer that as advice to others.
So as you're going through that process of kind of discovering who you are, and I guess, you know, the thing that you mentioned is that most people define themselves by the work that they do. Are there some exercises that people can go through that you think are helpful for them to kind of discover that?
There is. It's surprisingly easy. It's inexpensive. And it's can be quite moving. At the University of Michigan, where I've learned a lot with some of your other podcast followers, Kim Cameron and Bob Quinn, both very good friends of mine. I've known for a number of years, and indeed I've been one of their, I call it test labs. They come up with this great idea, and then they say, let's bring it to Jim and let's see if it works in a corporate setting. It's called Reflected Best Self. Very simple exercise. Send out, it can be to any number, but let's call it 20 people. And you say to those folks, please tell me a story, three stories if you would, about when you've seen me at my best, my most vibrant, my most positive, right? And then you take all these and you bring them together and you'd be amazed at what those stories are. They're not, oh, Jim, you were, you know, brilliant when you led that task force, or Jim, you know, you came up with that solution at 2 a.m. to whatever problem that was. They usually, at least they were, I was very fortunate to hear them about myself, of my most authentic self when I was giving to others, right? When I was helping someone else through a difficult problem. And they could see who I was. They could see the best of me. Oftentimes when I was hung up with, you know, what I did, they were showing me who I was. And when I first did this exercise, oh goodness, about 16, 17 years ago, I still have all those papers together. And whenever I'm having a down day, as we all do from time to time, I'll pull them out, I'll read them. It helps me recenter. So I would encourage anybody to do it. Send it to family, friends, coworkers. There's no magic formula on who you send them to. And oftentimes people say, I'd love to. I'd love to tell you a great story about yourself.
No, great advice. Definitely, it's sometimes for people just to have that starting point, and I think that would be really helpful for people to do that. Now, as you're thinking back to kind of when you were first put in a leadership role, and we have a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are kind of early on in their leadership and their careers. What advice would you give a new leader? And thinking back, maybe mistakes that you made, or you know, mistakes you've seen others as you're consulting with CEOs. What advice would you give somebody?
Well, that's a great one, and it is one of I think about a lot. So, in one of my first real managerial assignments, I was sent to fix a company in Europe. I was transferred to London to run an investment company. Where story I like to tell is redemptions were 4 times our sales. We had some of the worst investment performance in the industry, and our administrative processes were so bad, we were probably lucky to find any of our customers. And of course, I was the bright young 30-something, and I was going to fix everything, you know. And there was an older gentleman, happened to be a Texan, who was kind of my boss's boss, if you will. And every week, he'd kind of pull me into a performance appraisal and kind of yell at me, and, you know, I'd say, okay, and then I'd dismiss it because I was so smart and he wasn't. And then about 6 months in, he pulled me aside. He said, Jim, I got to talk to you. I said, sure, what do you want? He says, I've noticed you. He says, you're a smart guy. He says, you're probably smarter than any 4 or 5 people in your unit put together. He says, I've seen you work. He says, you're a really hard worker. You're in at 7, you won't leave until 9. You're first one in, last one out. You know, he says, you're probably working harder than any 10 people in your unit put together. He says, but it's not about how smart you are, and it's not about how hard you work. He says, you're in charge of 50 people. Your job is to get the best out of them. Go figure that out. And man, Mark, I got to tell you, that was like a 2x4 upside the head. He was absolutely right. And that lesson stayed with me for the rest of my life and now. Which is, it's not about how smart I am. It's not about how hard I work. If you're in a managerial position, and I would argue, or an influencer position, which is you have the ability to influence others, it's about how you get the best out of them. It's nothing about me.
A lot of the leaders that I'm talking to weekly, you know, you can hear it in their voice. They're tired. They're exhausted, and it's a lot of it's mental, just trying to figure out what to do next. How do you keep that positive energy? Maybe think back to a time where you were feeling kind of depleted, and what did you do to kind of get refocused?
Well, great question, and indeed that's happening a lot now. I'm working with teams, a worldwide team right now, and indeed, you know, the pressures of this are enormous for everyone. First and foremost, give yourself permission, right, to just identify where you are. It's not normal. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. There's not an easy fix for any of these. So it's, you know, give yourself permission. It's okay to say to others that are with you too, it's, yeah, sometimes I'm a little nervous and I'm scared here too, right? You know, those business leaders who want to be all buttoned up and say, you know, oh, well, I've got this all figured out. You know, good luck with that. Let me know what the magic formula is and, you know, please, you know, send it my way. Most of us don't have it. We're trying to figure it out. And when we give ourselves permission to identify where we are, encourage others to say it's okay, then start for each of us, where do we get energy and support? Right? What are some of those things that we do, both personally and collectively? One of those is just to kind of rejoice every day in terms of what we have as opposed to what we don't have. See, if we talk about positive leadership for a second, where Kim Cameron and Bob Quinn have spent most of their research in life, and I'm a great believer in their work, it's that simple thing of perspective, looking at what we have. Figuring out, I call it MacGyver theory, right? Okay, I'm faced with this problem. I've got a paperclip and 16 things, and I wish I had all these others. Now I can spend all my time and energy over here wishing on what I had. Why don't I figure out my paperclip and my 16 household items here to solve the problem? And indeed, that's a bit of positive leadership. And indeed, I would argue that's how you renew yourself, which is focus on what you have, figure out how you can repurpose it, turn it upside down, inside out, right? Invite others, because we never know where help's going to come from, right? If I'm closed up and I just want to have it all to myself, then I have the power of one. But when I bring that to the open and invite others to help me, I can have the power of literally thousands or even millions. And so that's what I do. I try to focus on what's happening, what's positive, where we can figure it out. I'm not afraid to ask for help when I need it most, and to offer it willingly to others with the idea that they'll help somebody else and help somebody else along the way.
As you talked about getting things done through others, that's definitely a focus of a leader. There's also some other things, and a lot of times I'll talk with new CEOs that have just kind of the first time working with a board and trying to get things done through, you know, the board and working with a board and how it figuring out that relationship. You've been in that CEO seat and had to do that over the years. Talk a little bit about just your thoughts around or what advice you'd give somebody that maybe the first time that they're working with a board.
I will, and I'll tell you a story. Indeed, this happened about 4 or 5 years ago. I had a consulting engagement for a large global company, and they needed to turn things around. And they had taken the existing CEO, and he was going to retire. The new CEO came in literally the day we got the assignment. So I met him as he walked out of the boardroom. And I took him aside, and I said, John, I've got a piece of advice for you. And he kind of looked at me, and I said, listen, I said, first off, you're going to understand how I work. I'm going to tell you what you need to hear, not what you may want to hear. And I said, what got you here to this day and to this appointment is not what's going to make you successful. I said, the vast majority of what got you here was technical expertise, the ability to figure things out, and within your technical discipline, he had been a CFO and been promoted to the CEO. I said, I want you to think about your energy in three levels. First level is managing down, which tends to consume a lot of the CEOs trying to, you know, understand what's happening within your organization, the competitive pressures and all those things, right? And I said, you're going to try to be consumed by those, especially since the company was struggling a little bit. I said, second, don't forget to manage sideways, which is, your now direct reports, but really are your peers. It's not about what you're doing personally. It's about the ability to enable those so that they can bring the organization forward. And I said, the third one is you have to manage up. And kind of looked at me quizzically, said, well, I'm the CEO. I said, no. I said, talked about the board. 75% of all the CEOs who were fired during the financial recession, the largest single reason for their firing was not the performance of their company. It was their inability to manage and communicate with their board. And so that's the advice I would give any CEO coming in is, you're used to managing down, maybe you manage sideways, you're now job, and you know, and if you want to divide it a third, it's that three-way. Why? Because your board, number one, is there to help you, to give you counsel, to give you advice, to help enable your organization, to sometimes maybe even prevent you from doing some things that you thought were absolutely brilliant. That is a conscious management aspect of your job, equal to, or in some cases larger than, the managing your sideways and managing down in your organization.
Talk a little bit experience. Maybe somebody has made all the wrong moves with their board. Maybe they've gotten sideways with them. Is there a way to recover? Or what would you advise somebody who's kind of in a situation where things have gone south and now they're trying to turn that around? Is there a way to do that?
There is. And remember, your board members are just like others. They want to have a positive relationship with both you as the CEO. They want to have a positive relationship with the company. The vast majority of them aren't doing this for their director's fees. You know, most of them, especially if it's a larger board, you know, it's nice to have, but they want to be engaged and they have a lifetime of experiences. Asking for their guidance, their thoughts, their perspective, willing to be vulnerable in that you don't have all the answers. I will tell you, the vast majority of people I've met throughout the world, that does nothing but endear you. Now, you may not want to do that at the annual meeting, right, where
right.
everybody's there. Quiet dinners, moments after a board meeting, saying, you know, Billy, Mary, would you have a few minutes? I'd love your perspective on something, right? Most directors hate sitting there, getting their board books, and being bored to death by endless PowerPoint presentations and being droned on by executives. That's not why they're there. They're there to offer thoughts, perspective, insight, guidance. Take them up on that. They will give it willingly. The more you ask, the more they will be receptive to you. It's what the single largest mistake I found both with my clients and in my own experiences that people make with their boards. Just do the opposite. Just reach out to them. Take in that experience, that judgment. They'll give it to you willingly.
Right. So are there any books that you recommend often to people that you're consulting with or coaching or people that are new leaders?
The one that I recommend the most, I think I joke with my friend Kim Cameron that I've probably sent out more than perhaps he's even sold. It's called Practicing Positive Leadership by Kim Cameron from the University of Michigan. Why do I love the book? Why do other people enjoy the book? It's short. It talks about positive leadership, but not just in the theoretical terms of, you know, why does positive deviance work and the heliotropic effect and all that good stuff. It's like, here's something you can do today. Try these three things. It's free, right?
Right.
You don't have to be CEO to do it. You can be a manager, you can be a first-line supervisor. You can just be one of the guys or gals and do it, right? And it helps you understand life, right? And it helps you understand perspective. So it's one of my favorites. Another one that recently came out by another friend of mine from the University of Michigan is Wayne Baker. It's called All You Have to Do Is Ask. And it really is a great study which basically says, people, regardless of where they are, their political party, their religious affiliation, really will, the vast majority, will do something to help somebody else, right? Not expecting anything in return. And when you turn that around and ask, you'd be amazed where help comes from. One of the stories that I think is actually in the book is one for myself, which was when I had taken over to be the CEO of Prudential Real Estate and Relocation. We had one of these big conferences in Austin, Texas, and I was the new CEO. It was literally, I think I'd been on the job about a month, and they put me in front of this convention of about 3,000 real estate agents. And if you know anything about real estate agents, and God, I love them, it's what's theirs is theirs and what's yours is theirs. Said another way is, how do you help them get a deal? And so we had professional script writers and, you know, and they're saying, oh, Jim, you're the new CEO. You've got to declare the direction. You've got to make definitive statements. You've got to do all these things. And, you know, you've got to command the audience. I just looked at him. I threw it out. I said, I want to try something different. And so what we basically did was, so I'm giving my inaugural address. And I said, listen, I want, at these conventions, everybody tells you to take your phones and to turn them off. I want you to turn them on. And there's a number behind me. And what I want you to do is text your single best idea about how to get a new customer, how to keep a customer for life, how to close a difficult transaction. And I said, if you give me your absolute best, right, I'm going to pass it to the next person and the next person. If you give me junk, we'll collect junk. But if you give me your absolute best, imagine what we can do. And so I said, you know, listen, to turn up the house lights. Give me my phone. I'm going to start to text them right now. We're going to do this for the next 3 days and see where we come out. And real estate agents are a competitive bunch. I said there'll be a prize for the person who gives the most suggestions and a prize for the person who gives the most creative. So sure enough, the room comes alive. Everybody's taking out their phones. They're doing all the stuff you're not supposed to do, right? after 48 hours, we had collected probably close to 2,500 suggestions. And when we got rid of the nonsense that you always get, right, and some of the duplications, we had 1,000 unique ideas, terrific ideas. We packaged them up into a little book, right? And one of the franchise managers said, Jim, you just gave me great ideas to send out one a day for the next 3 years. How much did it cost us? Nothing. All we had to do was ask. All we had to do is say, if you give me your best and don't be afraid to share that best, and I give it to somebody else and give it to somebody else, you will be the recipient of it as well.
That's great. I, you know, Wayne Baker is actually going to be our next guest on this this podcast, and so there's a thread. We're kind of taking the people that are part of these stories and hearing the insights. Now, I know I heard the story kind of you taking the positive leadership lessons, and you know, I think one of the things we talked about with Kim was that a lot of times people think of positive leadership as something really soft and kind of you know, the rah-rah, let's get positive. But you've seen in your own just the financial turnaround of a company, of organization. Talk a little bit about that, just kind of the you know, maybe people that are listening going, oh yeah, positive thinking, you know, that's just a soft thing and people get pumped up. But what experience have you had around that and the results that you've gotten?
Yeah, no, I think, people confuse positive with Pollyanna and only saying nice things. Sometimes, right, being positive is helping us see things that we may not. There's a concept that's called best self, which is what am I really good at, you know, and when we focus on what we're good at and making that outstanding as opposed to deficits, which is, Jim's not a really good speller. I'm a terrible speller, as anybody in the world. And if I spent all my time and energy trying to be a good speller, at best I would be normal. My wife would tell me, Jim, you're only going to be abnormal, right? But what are those things that I'm good at, right? Focus on those as opposed to focusing time and energy on that. And that's one of the biggest things that I think many CEO and managers really get confused with, is that if you think about it, every organization, and indeed each of us as individuals, you've got about X amount of calories. You know, sometimes we measure them in dollars, sometimes we measure them in time, whatever measurement formula you want, but there's X amount. And what we tend to do, and I've been guilty of this myself and tried to do it differently and as I've got to run an organization, is we go to deficits. Johnny is struggling in his job. So what do? We send Johnny to a course, right? All right, let's make Johnny normal. Then we look at Mary. Mary's doing outstanding over here. What do? We give her more work. Why? And then Mary becomes normal, right? Rather than that, it's what we do is we try to study, why is Mary positively deviant? Why is Mary abnormal in the positive direction? Because deviance just means variance from the norm. And then what are those attributes? Now, perhaps Mary's in the right job. Now, Johnny over here, is Johnny in the wrong job? Is Johnny in his best self role? And oftentimes it's saying, you know what, we've asked Johnny, or we'll use Jim in this case, to be our proofreader, and he's just never going to be very good. So just stop trying. And sometimes in organizations, it is actually just that easy. Mm-hmm. Now, positive means telling Johnny or Jim, we'll use in this example, Jim, you're not going to be our proofreader anymore. We have noticed you're really good at these other things. We're going to move you over here to try this. Let us find out what you're good at and give you the opportunity to be outstanding, as opposed to what you're not good at and try to make you normal. And you do this in all sorts of ways in large organizations. That is positive. That's being helpful. There's also a second one, which is the only thing that you can command as a CEO is attendance. You can't command someone to care. You can't command them to go the extra mile. You can't command them to think creatively, all those things that we have to give freely. Some folks in those environments just don't want to be in that type, and that's okay. Trying to brainwash them to say, listen, I want you to be in a positively oriented culture. They're like, no, I don't like that. I grew up reading, you know, Winning Through Intimidation, and that's my Bible. We say, okay, that's fine. you'll be happier going someplace where that is an expectation and indeed a normative behavior. Example I like to use is if you're going down the street in any busy city, well, probably not in the last few months, but if you were in New York and in any normal time, you know, if you're walking with the crowd, you actually can walk pretty well. If you're trying to walk against the direction of the crowd, you can make headway, but it's hard work. So all what we say is find that direction, that crowd, that culture in your organization, right, that you feel good about and go with that. And if it's not there, one of the questions I get asked a lot by students at Michigan and others, they're like, you know, what do I do if I'm in a toxic culture, thinking I have a magic bullet that's going to change it? My view is leave. It's just that simple, because you're going to try to go negative to normative. No, find one which aligns around you. And my lesson to the bosses, if you will, if you're not creating that, you're going to lose your best talent. Why? Because they can go.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. So, Jim, when you're not working, what are some of your outside things that you enjoy doing that recharge you? And talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, it's funny. So I've got two daughters, and my youngest daughter was a rower in high school. Mm. And it's great. You know, you get up at 6 in the morning, you go to all these things. And so I became fascinated with all of that. So I've become a rower, a long-distance rower. So I'll if I've got the time, I'll go out and I'll row, 12, 15 K a day. And I just love the solitude and the exercise. It allows me to think about who I am. It lets me just kind of have my Zen moment, because if you're a rower at all, there's this quiet, peaceful, really kind of a oneness that allows you to just let all the little things go. And it's one of the ways that I regenerate my energy. Mm.
Have you read the book, Boys in the Boat?
I know of it. It's on my reading shelf.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're a rower, you'd enjoy that book. We've been listening to that on during the pandemic. Again, I'd actually heard it a while back, but and I've heard that rowing is probably the best exercise for all your muscle groups. So I've been looking at a rowing machine. So that's, we can definitely, Well, give some, you know, is there any parting advice that you would give a leader as you're thinking about maybe somebody that is kind of in that position trying to figure things out? What advice would you, kind of final thoughts would you give to them?
Sure. A couple things. One is persevere. There's not an app for everything, as much as we'd like to think there is. Second, learn from others, right? Sometimes what they do and what they don't do. Be enormously curious. Three, ask for help. You'll be amazed at where it comes from. All you need to really have to do is ask. And finally, try to find ways to distinguish both yourself and your organization. Focus on what's right as opposed to what's wrong. Study positive deviance, not just negative performance. And invite others to do those things for your organization. Command only gets you so far. It'll get you attendance, everything else. Create that environment and figure out, almost regardless of where you are in your organization, the more senior you are, the CEO, the more I would argue it's true, you are the enabler of others. Figure out what that means for yourself and for your organization. Sit back. Fabulous things will happen.
Well, great. Thanks, Jim. This has been helpful, I know, to the people that are listening. And if somebody would want to learn more about kind of what you do, how would they find out about your work?
Sure, they can reach out to me on LinkedIn, mindsetadvisors.com. Please do. I help mentor dozens of folks free of charge every year. Why? Because someone was kind enough to do that for me one day, and it's the way that I try to pay back. I'd be happy to share either experiences or thoughts or help people gain perspective at any point in time. Mark, thank you so much for having me. It's just been a pleasure being with you, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Great. Thanks, Jim. Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.